June 14th, 2020. How are we feeling out there? Going swimming this week when the pool's open? Me? Not Monday. But I'll see how crowded they are later in the week. I know my youngest is dying to go. Positive COVIDs are up, but still staying under 8%. Next week's a big week to see if the protests did or did not affect the country. A lot of politicians are going to be looking for another job if we don't spike, which really I'm fine with on both sides of the aisle. Baseball, get it together already. Look, I grew up listening to the games on the radio, keeping score. You're not going to lose me. From where I sit, this one's on the owners. It's not my money, but make $100 million per team next year and do whatever it takes this year to get the product on the field. Did you see what Garth Brooks has got coming up? Okay, later in June, one show via satellite across the country aiming at 300 drive-in theaters. $100 per person per car. Get the pen and paper out on that gross revenue. Here's the thing, though. Imagine, if you will, go ahead and pick somebody. REO Speedwagon. If you're REO Speedwagon, do you want to do 100 dates in front of 5,000 people per gig? Or do you want to go one night, same cheese? If you listen to my podcast, you know I've made some predictions before that have come true. Maybe this one. Black Crowes, hit me up. Moving on, going to throw myself under the bus. Wife came home with Charmin toilet paper this week. And I'm not going to tell you from where. Dearbergs. First time since this mess hit that we've gotten Charmin. Here's what caught my attention, though. Charmin now has Ultra Gentle. Never did before. I'm just saying. Three things that if you have not, you should. F for family. Brainchild of comedian Bill Burr, fourth season debuted on Netflix Friday. For those who haven't seen it, it's Bill's take on growing up in the late 70s. All the stereotypes are there. Bill's the dad who's got a temper and foul mouth. Laura Dern is the pregnant wife who discovers Lamaze. Eldest pothead disappointment son is Justin Long. And Sam Rockwell, admitted man crush, is a cokehead swinging ex-radio jockey. You know, same old, same old. I think you can always tell how good an animated series is by how many talented folks just want to be a part of it. Listen to the list of guest voices this season. Dave Kochner, Joe Buck, Vaughn, Gary Cole, Allison Janney, Keep Going, Keep Going, Melissa Villaseñor, Kurtwood Smith, John Michael Higgins, and the awesome Carol Kane, just to name a few. Come and Get Your Love by Redbone is the best opening theme song since Guardians of the Galaxy. Oh wait, same song. Number two, The City That Sold America, documentary released in 2018 about Chicago and its rich advertising history. After it hit my radar and I watched it last week, they should rename it The City That Sold America for the viewing pleasure of David Oliver. Could probably do a whole podcast on this documentary. Let me hit you with the highlights. Unfortunately for St. Louis, we missed our chance and Chicago became the first great American city. Moment of silence. Couple reasons for this. Unlike the East Coast, Chicago was built by Americans, not immigrants. They weren't tied to doing things like folks did in the old country. If an idea had made sense, they ran with it. Number two, all commercial and personal railroads had to go through Chicago. If you were going coast to coast, you legally had to stop in Chicago and change trains. Many different backgrounds, different skill sets landed in the Windy City. Here are a few things created within the Chicago advertising community. Catch on this. Mail order catalogs. It was a biannual event in America to get the Sears catalog. Montgomery Ward was the first actually invented Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer to give their catalogs during Christmas some buzz. Coupons, first time. You clipped them, you filled out your mailing info, you mailed it back to them, and in return you received either sets of coupons or some free product. Voila, the invention of trackable ROI. Focus groups. This would really come to the forefront when finding out women were an untapped market later down the road. Chicago TV, not scripted, but conversational. At first, this led to your soap operas and your kids' shows, the morning and evening shows like Today and The Tonight Show. Soaps especially led to title sponsorships, the lifeblood of sports. Kids' shows, like Little Orphan Annie, originated from Chicago because it was in the central time zone. You could syndicate. Did you just think about Ralphie? Ovaltine? Or were you thinking about the soft glow of electric sex gleaming from the window? The two guys that led the charge were Albert Lassiker and Leo Burnett. Lassiker's knack was finding products that were used almost daily and promote something everybody had already, but he made them unique for his client. As an example, Schlitz beer, let's steam our bottles. Everybody did that, but Schlitz claimed it first. Pepsodent toothpaste, Remus plaque, they all did that. But now it was owned by Pepsodent. Lassiter also changed the utility of a product. Kleenex was known for the most part as a makeup remover. Lassiter changed that to a daily necessity to kill germs and disease. Nobody drank OJ for breakfast. One campaign later, it was a must-have, and the average serving of Sungus oranges went from 1 to 4. For Leo Burnett, he didn't start his own agency until he was 44. Today's 54 is yesterday's 44. He wanted his clients to come off as likable and trustworthy. Less language trying to convince you, bigger images. He actually created the 2-page spread. He also perfected the art of the character. Tony the Tiger, Jolly Green Giant, Pillsbury Doughboy, the Keeblers, the Kool-Aid Guy, Charlie the Tuna. Chuck, take live tuna and feed the mayonnaise. Call Starkus. And the biggest of them all, the biggest of all of them, the Hamburglar. I'm kidding. He did that, but I was referring to Ronald McDonald. McDonald's, Ray Kroc from Chicago. 2 quick points about McDonald's. In the 70s, through focused marketing, McDonald's learned wives felt bad about taking their family out for dinner. They wanted a break, but felt guilty. Ipso facto, Burnett and his people came up with the "You deserve a break today." Also about this time, Tom Burrell leaves Burnett to start his own African-American agency. These kind of agencies struggle to break into TV. McDonald's hires them to do commercials showing Americans, African-Americans, doing normal American things, but with a twist. If you remember the Double Dutch spot, that's a good example. Let me leave you with these 3 nuggets. Crash Test Dummy Campaign Changed the Law. Burnett's ad director in the 60s, Draper Daniels, and the entire cast of all of those guys, not an actor in the group. They were just friends. They've been talking like that for years. They knew a writer, producer, made the spot. Trust me, I didn't spoil the doc. There's still a lot more that you can watch to enjoy. When contacts started to become more important than connections, Chicago started to lose some of its luster. Maybe that's starting to come back around. Anyone out there, by the way, knows Charles Claggett Jr. from Darcy, St. Louis? I would love to talk to him. Last but not least, have you heard yet about our town's Zachary Babcock? He's changing lives with his company Underground Empowerment. In addition to his own podcast, Zach is mentoring hundreds, many with his alpha attitude, on how to let their voices be heard. So we all know the saying, rags to riches. How about 5 years in jail to riches? Look, you can Google Zach and hear him as a guest on other podcasts talk about his inspiring story, and we do that. But I wanted to find out about, Zach the person growing up in Ferguson, his life behind Underground Empowerment. And we did. Entertaining talk, walking the walk, Zach Babcock.
Go to Overtime. Overtime with Oliver, with my dad. Tell your friends.
And we are proud, happy, looking forward to talking to Zachary Babcock, Underground Empowerment, an author of Prison to the Promised Land. How long ago was that book, man?
It's so crazy you're bringing up that book. I was still in network marketing when I wrote it. It was back in 2016, and I kind of glorified network marketing in there, and I'm no longer in it, so I pulled it off of Amazon. It's still available for Kindle version, but I haven't pushed it in years. I got something else in the making that's gonna outdo that.
The expectation. I'm tingling, man. All right, so I'm not a big fan of Zoom. I'd much rather be sitting down in a room talking with you face-to-face, but because we're on Zoom, everybody I know who's got tats, they got stories behind them. Show me your favorite tattoo. You got one?
Favorite tattoo? I mean, a lot of them mean different things, but I'll just go ahead, and this is probably going to strike you as like, wow. But, because we're both from St. Louis, but this one right here, the Rams tattoo, that's my favorite because I'm a diehard Rams fan. Even though they left us in St. Louis, I'm still a diehard. I love them to death. I know most St. Louisans hate the Rams. That's my team, man. It's always been my team since a little boy, and it'll always continue to be my team, even if they're playing in Egypt.
When are they opening up that new stadium?
It's supposed to be this year in a few weeks. They just got a delay the other day because somebody fell and died during the construction, which is very unfortunate. That was just a couple of days ago at the time of this recording. But, yeah, it's supposed to be this year, and now they're talking about it with all this COVID stuff of them not even opening to fans in the stadium. That's going to be weird watching football with no fans in the stadium, but, yeah.
All right, so we got a lot of talk about it. I'll let you know my morning this morning. Got up, got some coffee. Got on my podcast, your podcast, episode 226, by the way. Congratulations on that.
Thanks.
Bedros Killian, did I pronounce that right?
You did, yeah.
What does the privilege of being underprivileged mean to you?
Yeah, the privilege of being underprivileged, it's essentially turning what most people call a disadvantage or weakness into your advantage or to your strength. In my case, me doing over 5 years in prison is my strength for a lot of reasons. One, because I developed mental fortitude and a mental toughness, a resilience, a strength of character that I wouldn't have developed had I not gone through what I went through doing that. Obviously, I'm not going to go back and do stuff to go back to prison, but I'm saying that what going through that adversity built a strength of character that I wouldn't have gotten anywhere else. When I got out, I couldn't get a job anywhere because of the decisions I made. And so literally anybody with that doesn't have a felony conviction record, even if I'm 100 times more qualified than them, if we go apply for a job, they're getting it every single time. So I had to go through and start my own business. I got to go through and start my own business. And then on top of that, when I first became an entrepreneur, nobody took me seriously. Nobody gave me the time of day. I was just some ex-convict turned entrepreneur afterthought that nobody wanted to give the time of day to. So I had to work extra harder than the average person becoming an entrepreneur, which anytime that I've had to work harder, if I would have just had everything handed to me, I wouldn't have developed a lot of the skills and character that I have as a result of being underprivileged in those specific circumstances. So the whole underdog empowerment theme is about turning your so-called perceived disadvantages and weaknesses into your strengths and to your advantages.
So let's dive into that backstory a little bit. You grew up in Ferguson?
Yeah.
Played a little football?
Yeah, love. Did before I hit high school, before my grades fell off, I played junior.
Did you ever go into sports print and get your sporting goods?
I did. I'm surprised. Yeah, so many people don't even know what that is these days. But yes, I did, right there on Florissant Road, yeah.
Yeah, the Rockamans are family friends of ours. You know, Molly Rockaman got a farm out in Ferguson, and she grows everything organically, and she supplies a lot
of
stuff.
It's off
of
Dade Road, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, right in the back, in the back.
I grew up on Wesley, which is literally right off of Dade.
Ferguson, sports print, you know Ferguson Optical?
Yep. It's right there. It was right across the street from the sports print down the street just a tad.
Yeah, so Chuck's a buddy of mine. And when I was working up north, we'd always hit Mattingly's. Were you a Mattingly's guy?
We still go to Mattingly's to get their cheese fries because they're really, really good.
Now, I've done a little research on you. Are you going to be able to give me an I Love Ferguson t-shirt?
I'm actually wearing it right now.
So you alluded to the fact, man, you hit some hard times. You spent some time in jail before you corrected yourself. What was the car? Do you remember the car you were trying to steal when you first got busted?
Dude, I was such an idiot back then. I mean, I think we're all idiots when we're kids, right? I think I was maybe a little bit more of an idiot than the average person, I guess I would say. But, here's the deal. When I caught that case specifically, I was 17 years old. And at that time, I was into drugs, but I wasn't into the hardcore drugs yet. I wasn't smoking crack or shooting heroin at that point. I was smoking weed and drinking, which, you know, I don't do neither one of those no more either. But I didn't have no reason to steal in the first place. We were literally 17-year-old punk kids that we're bored and we wanted to go out and do something. Then we decided, oh, hey, let's go steal from cars. Just some idiots, right? And so we went and through the Ladue area, through the rich neighborhoods. We were going by cars that left their car door open or left their cars unlocked, and we'd go in there, take whatever they had in their car, and then if they had a garage door opener, we'd hit the garage door opener, and then we'd drive off. Come back 15, 20 minutes later after we hit up other stuff. And if it was just stupid stuff, yeah, I started going into the details. Just retarded, making bad decisions. And we ended up taking a car that night because they left their keys in there. And we thought that was a cool thing to do back then, which was
See,
really
this is how dumb. Imbalanced I am. Whatever that car was, not that you've become successful, I'd make dang sure I go out and buy that car just to remind myself every day what I used to do.
Yeah. Yeah, you know what? Even though I don't live in Ferguson more, I live in Bridgeton. I like to actually drive through it, not like routinely, but like every now and then. Like, I don't know. It's not like every 4 weeks I go through there, but every so often after I haven't been there, I like to go drive through just to remember what it was, where I came from.
So you were in once. You unfortunately had to go back again. Why is recidivism such a hard thing in the United States?
Dude, I'm glad you really asked that question. That's going to – I like to have like a dialogue. I don't want to talk your ear off for a long time, but it's okay if I give kind of a long-winded answer?
Speak the truth.
All right, man. So especially with what's going on now with the protesting and the systemic racism and stuff, like, and I believe that shit's true. All right. Can you cuss me, pie? I didn't mean to
sure,
cuss
go ahead.
All right. And I want to make this real clear right up front. I'm all for the peaceful protest. I don't like the rooting and the looting and the rioting. I think that's not okay. But anyways, so there's a systemic problem. So I protest my own way. I don't actually go out and hold signs and protest. I'm not saying there's nothing wrong with that. And I think that's the peaceful protests are awesome because it's getting a message across, hopefully, and creating change. How I protest, it's not actually protest. I'm building a business, right? And, you know, we've got a thriving six-figure podcast marketing agency that we're scaling right now. And that's really a vehicle to what my lifelong purpose is. And I don't really like to talk about what I'm going to do, but since he asked the question, you know, I'd rather just talk about stuff that I already did. But there's a systemic problem in the judicial system. It's a broken system. I've been through it. I've witnessed it firsthand, experienced it. It's designed on money and designed to keep you coming back into the system. They don't teach you how to fish. They give you a fish. Welfare, food stamps, assisted living. It's not teaching you anything. It's teaching you to be dependent on that system. And if you look at our recidivism rates nationwide, they're sky high. Matter of fact, if you look at our recidivism rates compared to any other country in the world, we dwarf other countries by a large margin. It's a clear indicator that our system is not working. It's built on money. And then on top of that, the taxpayer dollars that are being wasted for all these bullshit programs that don't even help people. I went through these programs myself. They do not help. There's nothing helpful about them. And then on top of that, they're taught by people that you can't even relate to in the first place. Then when you get out of prison, you got to go through more of these programs and you can't even get a job at that point, because if you try to apply for a job, you're not getting it just because you had that X on your record. And then so you got to go to these programs that don't even help, and you got to figure out, oh, I got to get gas money or catch a bus or somehow, and it's already hard for you to support yourself financially. And so it's just a big broken problem that I see. But instead of protesting about it, and I'm not saying, once again, I'm not saying protesting bad thing, it's just not my cup of tea on how I want to create change in the world. How I'm creating the change in the world is I'm creating an outsourcing agency where we're going to vet people coming out of prison, not all, but the people, the guys and gals that are serious about turning their life around, that are serious, like people that were like me, they're going to go through a vetting process. And the ones that are serious about it, they're going to have to go through this program that we create where they read specific books that work on their character and teach them valuable life skills that aren't even taught in a lot of our school systems. And they go through these programs that we go through, and then they get trained up. We figure out where their strengths are, and then we get them matched up with other companies, other entrepreneurs that we know, and get them jobs. Or for the guys and gals that are ready to be entrepreneurs like myself, boom, we help them with programs to help them become entrepreneurs. And so, long-winded answer short, I believe that's how we're going to take that recidivism rate and get it to 9% or lower. That's our mission, and that's what I'm committed to doing and how I'm going to make my change in the world. Once again, I don't like talking about what I'm going to do, but that's what gets me fired up, man.
Because you get out of your first stint, you're doing pretty well, you're selling clothes, you're making a lot of money, they find out you went to jail. I don't know how this all works, but they pull the plug on you, like, instantly, and then you kind of had a downward spiral from there.
Yeah, and to kind of piggyback on that, like, dude, I did all this stuff to myself. I'm not blaming anybody. I chose to go out and break the law. And I put myself in prison, and I'm not blaming anybody for that. What I'm saying is I feel like, man, if you change, you know, we've all done shit in our past where, you know, we made mistakes, but we've grown from that, you know, and people do change. And I feel like, you know, there could be better ways for people that do decide to change. But yeah, dude, I was working at the Buckle, the Galleria. And I was already working at Marley's Bar and Grill, working 40 to 60 hours a week. Crushing it there because I was super grateful to have a job. And then, you know, that's where I had stability. And then I get the job at the Galleria because I always shopped there and crushed it. third day sold 3,000. The whole store did 9,000. I only worked 6 hours. The whole operation for the whole entire day did 9,000. I was 1/3 of the whole store operation. They gave me the raise and moved me up into management, and that set off red flags into human resources and everything else. And then they call me back like, yeah, you're a convicted felon. We got to let you go. And instead of keeping my chin up and searching for other opportunity, I threw a pity party, started feeling sorry for myself, spiraled out, like you mentioned, became an alcoholic, and ended up going back to prison.
Gonna make a joke. What's it like to wake up in jail?
It sucks, dude. it's like the you don't want to wake up there, because that's what I did too. Oh man, I was so drunk. I was at Mimi's Bar and Grill in Ferguson, obliterated drunk, because that's all I was doing for like 6 months before I got locked up. Being a dirtbag, I'd wake up by like 10 a.m. in the morning by the time I crawled out of bed from being blacked out drunk the night before, and start hammering beers all throughout the day. And by the time around 8 or 9 p.m. hits, I started moving it to hard liquor. And by the time 12 a.m. hits, I'm gone. And I was at Mimi's and don't know what happened, but apparently I picked a fight, got arrested, and I had a warrant out for my arrest for a parole violation for a DWI. And I woke up in Ferguson to a blaring headache, lights super bright, back hurt because I'm sleeping on a bunk with no mattress, on a metal bunk, and I learned that I was going back to prison. It's 20 days from my twin sons were born. That was the best thing that could ever happen to me, by the way.
So when I heard that, and Zach, first of all, again, thanks for the time, man. You're really busy. I'm trying to start up a podcast. I'm not speaking well of you because I don't have a working knowledge. I'm actually a client, and I believe and agree with a lot of stuff that you do. When I was reading the story, not knowing what I don't know, your twins are born a couple weeks after you're in jail. Maybe you were like on a bender and thinking you were just going to shut it down in a couple weeks, and then it just got a little out of hand prior to the kids. Or was that not even a fact?
No, like what happened that night when I woke up in jail, that was 20 days before they were born. And so I woke up and realized that, oh shit, I'm in Ferguson jail, county, St. Louis County is getting ready to come pick me up, and I'm going to go back to prison. I don't know how long, because I had a year and a half left on my parole, so I could go back for anywhere from 6 months to a year and a half. Regardless, I'm not going to be there when my kids are born in 20 days. And that was so painful, the fact, because I grew up playing football at ABC, and I didn't have a dad growing up, and I remember all my friends' dads would be at practice, and I used to wonder how that felt to have a dad at practice, and I couldn't wait to not only be at my son's practice, but to be the coach on their football team and stuff, which we're going to do this year if the COVID shit doesn't interfere with that. But couldn't wait for that moment. Now I blew it because I wanted to throw a pity party and be selfish and go out and become an alcoholic because I got fired from a job and stuff. So that pain was what got me to shift my perspective on, like, hey, everything wrong in my life is my fault, and everything right in my life is my fault. And from here on out, I'm taking responsibility for everything in my life. And that's what kind of, that's what changed everything and got me moving into another direction.
How did you meet Stephanie?
We met at Marley's. I was a cook there. And the first time she came in, I remember she was in a white dress, and she was just like, man, beautiful. And, I took my shot. Obviously, she shot me down the first time, because that's how it goes, right? But I went up and showed her that I wasn't scared to come up and talk to her. And then she ended up getting a job there as a bartender. And then after that, I was like, yeah, it's game over. I don't even have to be aggressive now. I can just let it happen, you know?
How did you propose?
Oh, man. I did it on stage at the MGM Grand in Las Vegas in front of 5,000-plus people. I was in network marketing. This was 8 months after I got out of prison the last time. And was in network marketing when I started off, no longer in network marketing, but super grateful for the industry. But I did it, surprised her in front of 5,000 plus people.
All right, here's a question for you. Let me backtrack for a second. How did she not dump your ass?
That's a good question. I still ain't figured that one out.
All right, Zach, what's the difference between special and different?
Special. Damn, that's a really good question, man. Holy dude, special is like extraordinary. I guess you would say, and if this is just from my opinion, that's all it is. Extraordinary, above average, like uniquely, yeah, this kind of falls into different. So I would say above average, extraordinary. Different is just different from the main thing, I guess. I don't know. That's a really good question. It stumped me right there.
What is stronger, avoiding pain or gaining pleasure?
Avoiding pain is definitely stronger. If you think about it, is this rapid fire or can I expand on it a little bit?
Yeah, take your time.
If you think about it, every single decision you and I and every human makes is based off of those two pillars. It's based off of our need to avoid pain and our desire to gain pleasure. And in most people, not all, especially psychopaths, but in most people, our desire, our need to avoid pain is stronger than our desire to gain pleasure. But we literally make every single decision off of those two pillars right there. So yeah, definitely the need to avoid pain is stronger.
So if you Google Zachary Babcock, I mean, you're a podcaster, you're a guest on a lot of podcasts, you tell the story, and it's a great story, and I'm not trying to not talk about it, but just so that we're clear, you ran into some hard times, you picked yourself up, you started to be an entrepreneur, you now not only have your own podcast, but you help other people have their podcast. Have you ever heard of the name Ron LaFleur?
No, not off the top of my head.
Okay, so Ron LaFleur, hey, your kid's in the background.
That's funny.
Kidding. So Ron LaFleur, it's a good book. He went to prison, got out, and played baseball for the Detroit Tigers, and actually like led the league in stolen bases more than a few times. And so when I think of your story, because we only know what we know, I'm thinking like I know you, and I've never met Ron LaFleur, but you're my Ron LaFleur because that's an unbelievable story that people just gravitate towards. So if you haven't read it yet, Ron LaFleur, what's it called? One in a Million, Ron LaFleur.
One in a Million is the name of the book?
Right.
Yeah, I'm going to check that out, man.
All right, so you got out of jail, you're struggling. You ever own a Chrysler Aspen?
Yeah, I still own that Chrysler Aspen.
Because that's what you financed to kind of get this thing up and going, right?
Yeah, dude. Oh, man. So I'm a firm believer. A lot of people will say, I'm the kind of guy that will literally jump off the cliff and grow wings on the way down. And I've proven that throughout my entire life. It's what got me into prison. It's what also got me to where I'm at in my business now. And that could be a good and a bad thing. Just like with everything, there's pros and cons to it all. But if you're the type of person that like your dream, like you're like, you will do whatever it takes to win. You got to make it happen. I'm a firm believer in burning the boats and going all in and where it comes like it, this has to happen or else there's no retreat. Right. And so what I did, man, we were backed up on our bills. All right. Our credit was maxed out. Our water was shut off. And we got four kids and all this stuff. Right. And I went and got the title loan on the Chrysler Aspen for $4,000, which, you know, title loans, the interest rates on those are stupid, ridiculous. And I got it so I can join this mastermind to learn how to craft an offer, to write copy, to select my audience, craft the offer, and then write the copy. The audience is the perfect people I could serve. The offer is the perfect fit for that audience that helps them. And the copy communicates that offer to your audience. I invested that money that I went and got a title loan just to learn how to do that. And people were like, dude, you're stupid. That it's never going to work out. And all that. And it probably looked stupid at the time, but looking back, you know, 8 months after that decision, I had a 6-figure business as a result of that. So yeah, it was a great move. Probably not wise if you're not like all the way committed with your dream. So
how do you get Stephanie to sign off on something like that?
You what's the saying? You ask for forgiveness later. I can't remember how this goes, but
beg for forgiveness.
Yeah, you do it, and then you beg for forgiveness later. You don't ask for permission, whatever that is. You know, you just do it, and then you know, hey, do you forgive me?
You were a YouTube guy?
Yeah, I was a YouTube before the podcast.
You and Justin Bieber, right?
To Justin Bieber? No. That was a good one.
All right, so for people who don't understand the enormity of what you've done, let's talk about the prison thing. Let's talk about the fact that, you know, you stumbled, you're doing the car loan. Really, was there a moment where you were like, ha, I finally get why I'm on this planet. I understand this is what I'm supposed to be doing.
Yeah, it, man, and this is going to sound so cheesy, man, and 99% of my content and what I'm about, I would say, I don't know the exact numbers, but it's about like, hey, you know, toughen up, you know, go out and make it happen, you know, don't, no excuses, take full ownership, all this stuff. And it's never really about this rah-rah stuff or like this, this driven, whatever, but this is kind of more on the rah-rah side. But I got a plaque that's sitting behind my computer screen, and it's the Ferguson Citizen of the Year award that was given to my mom. And it was given the same year the whole Michael Brown situation happened. And it was a result because back in 2010, when I was in prison still, my sister died from a heroin overdose, and she ended up creating Ferguson Youth Initiative, which is an organization that still lives on even almost 5 years now at the time it's recording that my mom's been, that she passed away. But it, she created this this organization that empowers youth in the community, where they get them involved and engaged in the community. They take on leadership roles. Say some of the kids that are like 16 years old that, you know, can't pay a speeding ticket or a seatbelt ticket, like a 200 speeding ticket or whatever. Instead of making them go to jail, they make them do some community service, so they still learn the lesson, and then it helps make the community a better place. Things like that. There's a whole ton of different things that this awesome organization that she created did. And so I see that every day, and it's like how I want to model my life. And how I was talking about the recidivism rate, my goal with that, with the 9% or lower. And, you know, this is going to sound cheesy, but I was thinking about that not too long ago, like last summer-ish. I don't know exactly when. And I was like, man, that's what I want to do. That's the legacy I want to leave when I'm gone, that continues to impact people even after I'm gone, generations after I'm gone.
Because here's the sticky situation for you. You've got the great story, and people are cynical by nature. And when somebody first meets you, they unfortunately might have that, oh yeah, another guy, I was in prison, and now I'm living my life, and give me some money. And how do you not have concerns when you first meet somebody that they're not going to realize the real Zach?
I don't care. Like the cynical people, if they come around, they will, but I'm not, my marketing is not geared towards them. Every single piece of content you see from me is all geared towards a specific person. I'll tell you exactly who it is. And what's cool about it is, even though it's geared towards a specific person, it doesn't mean that it excludes other people, but it's so laser focused. And who it is, it's me, who I was yesterday or just starting out or anywhere in between. But it's geared towards an alpha male entrepreneur who's maybe a little bit rough around the edges. Doesn't matter if he's just starting out in business, broke as hell, or if he's already crushing it, 6, 7, 8, 9-figure business, whatever. But has this vision in his head that's so big that people don't believe that he's going to make it happen. But that doesn't matter, because he's committed to leveling up, to figuring out, doing whatever he's got to do to win and get that respect that he desires. Every single piece of content you see, email, podcasts, YouTube, Facebook posts, whatever, it's all speaking towards that person. But even though it's all speaking towards that specific person, I still got plenty of alpha female entrepreneurs in my audience. Tons of them. Plenty of clients too. It doesn't exclude them. It's just all that message is speaking to a specific person. Anybody that feels that way will latch onto it. And then the cynical people, they're going to say their things, whatever, and keep it moving. But you know what? It's funny, because the cynical, that the haters is what I call them, you know, it's the same thing. The haters, the cynical people, they actually help build my brand for me, because they get to talking crap on my post, sharing it out. And guess what? With that happens, it fuels my fire. For one, I'm like, okay, I'm gonna show you that I'm about this life for real. And then for two, they'll share my stuff because they don't disagree and talk crap or engage with my posts. And that helps more people see it that are a fit. They'll share it with their audience. And guess what? A lot of people in their audience agree with them, but there's some people in their audience that agree with me, and they end up becoming into my audience that become fans or whatever, and the followers in the long run. So I welcome them with an open heart, and I truly appreciate them.
The great thing about podcasts is you cannot get misquoted.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, so here's my Zachary Babb. By the way, Zachary, I don't know any other Zacharys. Where'd you get the name?
Yeah, this is a funny story. I go by Zach. All my friends call me Zach. I branded myself as Zachary, and the reason why is because when I came out of prison, at that time, I didn't fully step into who I was. I thought, I had to pretend to be something that I was not for people to accept me. So for example, I was like, oh, I can't do Zach Babcock. I have to be Zachary Babcock. I have to be proper. Or, oh, I have to go out around and wear suits and ties. Nothing wrong with wearing suits and ties if that's your thing. And you feel good, you look good. But, dude, I got a beard and tattoos and did over 5 years of my life in prison. Suits and ties are not my thing for real. And it didn't feel right with me rocking one, you know. And I thought I had to at a point in time when I first started in entrepreneurship. But, yeah, so Zachary was what I ended up branding myself with, and I just kind of stuck with it. It was like, heck, whatever.
ZZ Top didn't wear suits?
No, ZZ Top didn't wear suits. All right, so probably could have. They probably – well, yeah. You know, I think I've seen – with the beards and all this. Yeah, they have. Yeah, it's weird.
All right, so here's my Zachary Babcock is a nice guy story. We met a year ago, trying to remember, I think it was around Thanksgiving, at a Starbucks inside Target. It was snowing like crazy outside. And I don't know it at the time, but you're unbelievably successful and you're not condescending to me. You're not explaining to me how successful you are. You're just there for 10 minutes to hear my story. Tell me about what it is that you do. And so what I like about podcasts is I don't have an audience right now, but let's say 5 years from now when I've got one and people are listening to this, Zachary, you're the real deal, man. And what you're doing for people, especially in this time, you know, the entrepreneurs, when people can't get jobs, it's long ranging. Walk me through what you try to help people do initially, right off the bat, when they contact you.
Well, I got a system and it's a system that I developed through trial and error and through also learning from other podcasters and then implementing that and then getting results and then putting my own flavor and style to it and then combining all these things that I learned from other people and figuring it out on my own into a system that I've been doing for a while. But it depends though, and it's true. I know that, oh, it depends. It depends on where that person's at. So like if they already have a podcast and where they're at and what their goals are, that's where I always start. It's like, okay, what do you want? What's the return on investment that you want from your podcast, from putting your podcast out there? What are you trying to do? Are you trying to grow a huge audience? Are you trying to make a lot of money from it? Are you trying to do both? Are you trying to just interview really cool people? Like what's that end result for you? We got to get clear on that. And once we figure out that, okay, where are you right now? And then depending on where they're at, then we make out a game plan on how to get to that end result. So it really truly does depend on where that person's at the time.
You mentioned that you didn't have much of a father growing up. Do you have a mentor?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I made the mistake, though, where I'd had multiple mentors at once, and I would not recommend that. I would say find a good mentor and work with one at a time. And go deep with that person. And then there's going to be a time where you're like, okay, I've gotten what I was supposed to get out of this relationship. Not saying that you can't still be friends, but the mentor student relationship ends at a certain point, just like all things end at a certain point in life. And then you go find the next person. So I always have a mentor, but I made a mistake though, where I had multiple ones, and that is just too much. You do way better when you focus on one thing at a time.
Are you comfortable being a mentor?
Oh yeah. I wasn't at first for a long time. It was because I didn't, there was a lot of things. I tried to act like stuff that I wasn't. And cause I thought that's what I had to do. And I've seen it a lot in the industry. And that's one of the reasons why one of my big messages is like, don't be one of these fake entrepreneurs that's taking pictures in front of rented Lamborghinis, not their own, acting like it's theirs, saying that they can make you a millionaire overnight. Don't do that, because that's low life scumbag stuff. Like you don't have to pretend to be something that you're not, and you can't skip the process. Like everybody wants these quick fixes, but here's the deal: at the end of the day, you have to master your craft and have something, a tangible value to the marketplace that the marketplace wants and needs. You can't fake and say and promise something that you can't deliver on, and so. Do the work. You got it. And this is not the sexy answer, but it's going to take time. It's going to take practice, deliberate practice. And one of the best ways to get there, one of the faster ways to get there, not shortcut, but streamlining that process, is to find someone that already has what you want and to become their student, finding that mentor. But yeah, I was a little bit uncomfortable at first because I didn't have that. And I was trying to be something I wasn't. And then I learned that lesson. I put out a post calling myself out on it on Christmas Day 2018. And that was one of the best things, one of the smartest moves I made. And that led me to what I'm doing now.
Now, I've listened to a few of your podcasts, not all 226. And it's obvious that you're a reader. And in one of the podcasts, you talked about how with your employees, you make them read either a certain book or certain books. And I didn't hear what that book was. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Traction.
Okay.
Different things like Traction is a great, one of my top business books, especially for like, you strike me as a person like myself that's a visionary. Like you had the vision create, or are you more of like the integrator where you're like, you don't always have all the ideas, but man, you can take an idea and just drive it home. And I'm more the visionary. You kind of strike me as a visionary too. What do you think you lean more towards?
You know, it's interesting when it comes to this. I first wanted to make sure I could do it because I used to be a journalist. I used to be an on-air talk show host 3 kids ago, and I didn't do that for 20 years. And so then I was like, oh, let's see if I can still do this. So then, okay, I think I can still do this. The episodes are good. Now I'm at that place where I'm in lack of vision. So I need to go find people who can help me take the product and not do the vision part for me, but explain it to me so that I can learn up on it and implement it and have kind of like a give and take with somebody who's better at that than I.
So I was wrong. You are the integrator. So, and here's the thing, both the visionary and the integrator need each other. You need that to be successful. Like the smartest thing I did was to get an integrator, our COO, our chief operating officer, because he does the same things that you just talked about. He doesn't have the ideas or like, here's my strengths: ideas, research and development, developing the culture inside of the organization, relationships, networking with people, seeing the idea and like, man, this is where we're going, blah, blah, blah. That's my strengths. Where I suck at, which is the integrator, and I could solve big problems, but the small, finer details give me a headache. I can't solve the smaller ones. It's weird. And then so the integrator, he's like the managing of the people. Hey, he drives the company. They takes ideas and drives it home. The integration of like, okay, this is what we're doing. Let me build out the whole system. Like, for example, somebody makes a purchase. I'm just going to use a hypothetical situation. Somebody buys, say you sell coffee or mugs like this. On an e-commerce store, somebody buys that mug. Now that transaction has to go through, then fulfillment has to receive this order, then the manufacturers have to make it, then it has to go shipping out, like all that stuff that has to happen. That's what the integrator figures out and can like, oh, we're gonna go this here, boom, 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 it gets shipped here. I couldn't figure all that out. I could sell it. I just can't, you know what I'm saying? And so, long-winded answer though, but yeah, you definitely an integrator. So the book Traction explains these roles really good.
Even who's the author for that?
Gino Wickman. So this is the other one by him. It's called Rocket Fuel, and this is clearly just on that role. It's all I'm reading it right now. Rocket Fuel. It's by Gino Wickman. Traction is the first one I was talking about. It explains the business as a whole, and then Rocket Fuel goes deep on that relationship between the visionary and the integrator because it's such a you have to have both of those pieces for the business to work. And that relationship in the company, you both the integrator and the visionary have to be on the same page, and it's such a vital relationship, and they both need each other for it to work. But yeah, that's one of the books that the Traction is because it goes deeper than just that relationship itself.
What's the best part of your day?
I like all parts of my day, but sometimes I like other parts more than others on different days. But if I had to like one, it's the morning routine where it's just me by myself, no family, no business, no nothing. And I'm filling up my own cup first, where I'm doing my reading, I'm doing my meditation, my cold shower, my working out, all the things that I do to prime myself for the day before I start to go and fill up other cups. You know what I mean?
Not to be a jerk, but do you ever just count your blessings that you you know, might have been one bad needle away from none of this happening.
Yeah, dude. I wake up before I get into that cold shower. When I wake up, I sit there like, what am I grateful for right now? And I ask myself, and a lot of times it's the same answer. I'm grateful I'm breathing. I'm grateful that I have a house to live in. I'm grateful that I got a family. I'm grateful that I'm here, whatever. Sometimes I'll try to figure out different things, but yeah, man, absolutely.
What's the future hold for you, man?
A lot. I don't usually talk about what I'm going to do. I usually just show what I'm doing and what I've done, but definitely going to build a $1 billion company, be with a billion, call me crazy if you want. And that $1 billion company is going to fuel my life legacy, ultimate purpose. And that could change down the road, but right now it's that 9% or lower recidivism rate. And that's the mark I'm going to leave on the world. And that's going to continue to impact people for generations after I'm gone.
When you read that Joe Rogan signed $100 million with Spotify, what'd you think?
I was like, huge win. Awesome. congratulations. Good for you. I mean, like the people are like, oh, he only sold for $100 million. You mean tell me $100 million is a big deal. How many people do you see signing $100 million deals all the time? You know what I'm saying? Like, that's awesome. Great for Joe. And it's also a great, huge win for our industry. And I'm really, really paying attention to that because in September that kicks in and his Spotify is going to own exclusive rights. Right now, Apple dominates the podcast industry and they have for a long time. Spotify has been gaining ground the last 2 years. And then now after Joe Rogan kicks in where you can only listen to his podcast on Spotify come September, I'm going to be paying attention to where that market goes and seeing that. And we're already starting to dive deeper into Spotify. There's somebody to pay attention to. It's definitely Spotify, even though Apple still currently dominates the marketplace. They dominate like over 80%. But I am going to be paying attention to that.
When people come up to you and they say I want to do a podcast. What do I need to know? What do I need to do to start a podcast? What do you tell them?
4 W's, man. It's the most important piece of the whole entire thing. It's not the sexiest piece. The sexy stuff is like getting ranked on Apple, growing your downloads, interviewing celebrities, making money from your podcast. Those are sexy and fun and exciting things. But the most important for all that to happen and to have longevity with it is to understand your 4 W's, which is your podcast marketing message. It's what is your podcast about? Who is it for? Where is your podcast taking them? And why should they listen to you? And when you get that dialed in, and that's something that doesn't happen overnight. You get it dialed in and then it just continues to get super more laser focused over time as you get to know your audience and know you. But that's definitely the most important piece.
And what is your audience?
Alpha male entrepreneurs that are rough around the edges. They might be just starting out in business or they might already be crushing 6, 7, 8 figures, 9, who cares? But they have this vision in their head that's so big that other people don't believe it's going to happen, but that doesn't matter because they are committed to the process, to figuring out, to leveling up, to winning and getting that respect that they deserve.
What do you think a podcast is going to look like 10 years from now?
I think there's going to be definitely a video element to it. It's already moving into that. Spotify's already starting to test that part out, and that's why they're getting that exclusive rights to Joe Rogan. And I'm really paying attention to that. What's going on with that? I even see like 10 years from now, I see like them doing some crazy virtual reality augmented stuff where like we're having this interview now, even though it's remote, but we put on some goggles and it's like we're sitting next to each other, so it's like almost the real thing kind of stuff. I'm not a big tech person, but I see stuff like that happening into the industry. I can't say exactly what – I can't give you what it is because just trust me, pay attention to what we're putting out because with what we're getting ready to put out, we hope and we're very confident that it's going to flip the podcast industry upside down because there's a glaring missing piece to the podcast industry that I see from a podcaster's perspective, from my own podcast and from talking with countless, having over hundreds of clients and talking with podcasters all the time. There's a big missing piece that's not in the industry right now that we're going to be putting out there very soon.
So what I'm going to do is I'm going to have you on again in 10 years. We're going to clip that And we're going to say, look what you predicted 10 years ago. You knew it was coming.
That would be pretty cool, man. That would be really cool.
All right. So, again, appreciate the time. We're going to wrap this up. Go into a St. Louis 7, which is where I ask you questions that only St. Louisans can answer. But before we do that, I'm going to turn the tables on you. If you had to start over today, what's the one piece of advice you'd give yourself as an underdog entrepreneur to give yourself a start or a leg up?
I love that, dude. What I would do first is get really, really clear on who I am and understand me to the core, because that's how you're going to select the people that you can help, is understand who you are. And then once I understand who I am, then I get really clear on what it is that I want to do. Really clear, crystal clear, like having a vision board, like I have in my audience, of visual representations of everything that I want in my life, not just material things. I'm talking about, I got a picture, a photoshopped my head on this coach's body, and he's leaning down talking to two kids that are playing football, and then I put my kids' names on the back of the jerseys, and that's a visual representation of me coaching my son's football team, for example. Stuff like that in every single area of my life, and get really clear on exactly what it is I want. Then after that, I get really clear on why that's important to me, why I have to make that happen, because that's going to be the driver on the days that I don't feel like getting out of bed, that I don't feel like doing the emails, that I don't feel like going to the gym, whatever. That's why I got to do it. And that's what's going to get me through those days that I don't want to do it. I'm going to push through. And then after I got those three factors in place, then I'd get to work and I would focus on mastering a skill, not just kind of trying to skip steps. I'll take the time and really develop tangible, valuable skills in the that the marketplace wants and needs. Find the biggest problem that people are trying to solve and learn how to solve it. A problem that people would pay millions of dollars to solve because it's that big of a problem, and try to solve that problem. And then once I had that in place, just drive it home and stay focused and continue to refine the vision.
How old, you talked about football. How old are the kids?
My kids are 6 years old.
Okay, so I coached basketball. And Zach, I'm telling you, man, best times ever. Enjoy it. To me, what was really fun about coaching basketball, not football, but my kids didn't get ice cream cones with points. They got ice cream cones for rebounds and steals. And I just thought it was really important for them to understand, look, anybody can score 15 points a game if you throw it up 40 times. And I think they really understood the game. And I loved coaching and getting away from the dads in the stands screaming because their kid's not starting, and really everybody who was on the court, on the field, having a good time. So have fun with that, man.
Amen. I can't wait, dude.
All right. It's going to wrap it up. Appreciate your time. Hope you had fun.
Thank you, my man.
All right. Good talk. I want to thank Zach for taking a little time. Also, if you wouldn't mind, as you're listening to this, if you'd hit the subscribe button, that is the way I can get in front of some more ears. I would appreciate that. Oh, by the way, we did not record St. Louis 7 yet. We're going to, but we kind of got crushed for time. So don't kill yourself trying to find it. I'll let you know when it's out there. As we do another episode next week, really looking forward to Munsuk So from Junkin' Fish. I think you'll enjoy it. Thanks for your time this time. Till next time, so long.